Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
All here and in good spirits. Good, because we've got a great show. We talked yesterday with Egbert Osberg, founder of Drone Aviator, and we'll get to him in just a few minutes. But when he was here, just for the little bit of time, we talked earlier on air, and then afterwards we spoke out looking at some drones. It was really interesting, some of the things that he told us, and I was actually a bit shocked, and I'm not usually shocked, but I was almost dismayed. Wow, I don't ever get dismayed. Shocked and dismayed.
to be confused with shock and awe.
Yeah, to find out that things that were happening in the United States getting shipped back to China, and I don't like that so much. So the government's taken some steps to eliminate that, and I really want to find out from him what that's all about. I also like to find out a little bit about what it's like for him to start businesses. It's a lot of people's dream to start your own business and be an entrepreneur and reap the benefits of it. The problem is many of us don't want to pay the price to get that done. And it's not an easy price for most people. It's a difficult road. So I want to talk to him a little bit about that and raising money. Of course, most people don't start out well capitalized. They have to go out and figure out how to get the money in. Then how do you deal with discouragement and disappointments and trials and tribulations along the way? Because it's not just the business. Things go wrong in your family life. Things go wrong with your kids. Things go wrong with your parents. Maybe you need to add additional care to a parent, or life just gets a little rocky in a lot of different areas. And it's not always easy to manage and run a business. So I sound discouraging, don't I? This makes me not want to do this anymore.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about drones, so people
perk okay,
up.
Back up. And success, because obviously he's very successful in what he's doing. So we'll get to him in just 1 minute. Tomorrow, I'm very excited because Deborah Fox is going to be on with us. She is a workflow automation expert, which I really like because I like workflows. I'm kind of a bit scatterbrained when it comes to business sometimes. So if I don't have a workflow, if I don't have a method for every system, for every process we have, sometimes things don't get done. And I want to make sure that everybody listening knows how they can put those processes in place, because anybody with access to a computer these days can do that at no cost. I mean, you can get free CRMs that are pretty good, and they have these workflow processes in them, and we're going to try to pick her brain about how to make yourself much more organized and give you a really good chance of success in your operational department. Also, we've got some amazing guests coming up. If you're into the market, the stock market, and you've ever encountered asset allocation or efficient frontier modeling or modern portfolio theory, you've probably heard those names and maybe don't even know what they are, but maybe you're a student of it. Well, the guy that won the Nobel Prize in 1990 for economics, who created the modern portfolio theory and all the dimensions that go into that, Harry Markowitz, is going to be on coming up when?
September 19th.
Okay, I wasn't quite sure what 9/19 meant. But that means September 19th.
You're a smart one. Come
I thought
on,
there
Bob,
was a code there or something somewhere. Okay, 9/19, September 19th.
Yeah. We have fun. Yeah. Can you tell?
I can see that.
How many times do we have a Nobel laureate on, right? You don't get to have a Nobel laureate on. And what a fun thing to be able to sit and pick his brain for. Wonder if he's got any good investment tips.
And who knew he lives and works not only in just San Diego, but in Pacific Beach.
Yeah, all right near where you used to live, right?
Right near where I used to live. I probably,
saw
him at a coffee
shop. Walked him down the street. Yeah, he's almost,
no idea.
He's almost 90 years old now.
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. I'm very excited about that. And so many other guests we have coming up. We'll announce more as we go along. We're kind of getting our feet on the ground here. You'll notice if you've been a listener since we started our daily show 2 weeks ago, you kind of picked up on the fact that we were a little rocky getting started. We've smoothed that out a bit, and we're not quite so rocky right now. We'll get it totally smooth one of these days, won't we?
Like melted chocolate.
Oh, I like the way you said that.
That must be a British term. Because I've never heard.
Anything chocolate's good.
Melted or not, right?
Right.
Let's get to our guest, Egbert Ostberg, founder of Drone Aviator, is here with us. Egbert, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Did I get your name right?
This time.
Good. Well, what kind of name is Ostberg?
It's very Dutch.
Dutch. But it starts off with two O's.
Two O's. So it's pronounced O, the Ostberg.
I don't know why I wanted to say Ostberg.
Everybody does. In fact, my old skipper, when I was on the USS Constellation, he kept calling, hey, Oost, hey, Oost. And finally he goes, hey, Goose. Yeah, we're going to make that your call sign. That kind of stuck with me. So in the Navy, I'm known as Goose.
Can't you shorten that with a double dot over an O and just leave one O at the beginning? Isn't that a Dutch in the Dutch alphabet?
I think it's either the German or Bavarian or that. That area there. Yeah. So the Dutch are very specific, right? They have to be.
Got to be double O.
That's right.
And you are the founder of Drone Aviator. I want to talk about that. We have so much to cover, but real quick, your background.
Sure.
Where did you didn't grow up in the United States, did you?
No, I grew up in Europe, actually. I'm an Air Force brat. My father was a flight surgeon in the United States Air Force.
Wow.
So I grew up predominantly in Germany, so in Han, Germany. And then spent a lot of time in Spain. So my mom's actually Spanish, so that's the other side of me. And so I actually got back to the United States when I was a sophomore in high school. And then I think in Texas, thereabouts, joined the Navy, had a career in the Navy for about 10 years, surface warfare, mentioned that. And then after that, a little company you might heard of called Pfizer came by and picked me up.
Yeah,
so I was selling pharmaceuticals, an account manager here locally in the Southern California region. And then after that, I kind of went on my own, actually was downsized, right, with 5,000 of my closest friends there at Pfizer when they bought another company. And then that's when I realized, you know, I really need to look at, if I want security, it's got to be entrepreneurship. And that's where that came
from. And that seems so weird, that to get security, you need to go out and almost take that huge step of faith, leap of faith sometimes, and just not know where you're going to land. And that security...
Yep. That's the security part, right? And the faith, and you mentioned faith, that is a huge component of what's kept myself and my family going.
Your faith.
Yes.
The belief system that you have obviously then affects how you do business.
Absolutely.
Before we get started, because that's an interesting point, I was describing how tough life is for entrepreneurs, but it's tough for everybody sometimes,
sure.
Right? It's not any different for entrepreneurs, but you have to have a little different focus as an entrepreneur because you're the boss. I mean, calling in sick is often not an option. Dealing with discouragement and you hear bad news, you can't go out and whine to the employees
sure.
or cry on their shoulder because that's not good.
No.
And then if you make it really big, you can't go brag to them. You can't go brag to your family. It's hard to know who to celebrate with,
sure.
but obviously your faith informs a lot of things you do.
Correct.
How does it inform you in handling discouragement and in dealing with trials and tribulations, since we're talking about faith?
Well, that's actually the $100 billion question, I think, right? Because at the end of the day, you either believe you could do something or you believe you can't. And either way, you're right. In my case, my faith has pretty much shaped everything, especially when you're going through discouraging times. And we all have kind of gone through that. I mean, the 2008 crash, I mean,
right.
we crashed along with everybody else. You know, house is upside down, being downsized right after that. And the challenging things is, at the end of the day, what's the most important thing to you? Who are you and why are you here? And so my faith, you know, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus, and that's really kind of defined everything that I do.
So how long ago did you start Drone Aviator?
About 3 years ago.
And where did the idea come from, the genesis of the idea for Drone Aviator?
The genesis idea came from realizing, number one, this is fun. And having a drone to
the
play.
The drone is fun.
The drone is fun.
And by the way, for you listeners, we have a drone on the table.
That's right.
Actually,
I
and we
forgot.
Have a really big drone.
A big yellow
right
drone
us.
There in the back there from one of our partners.
Yeah, if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can see it right back there. But
right.
anyhow, so drones are fun.
Drones are fun. But what really the genesis came from when somebody told me that one of our partners, actually, Dr. John Marcellus, he said that the advent of the drone, especially with the technology and then how it's going to be ubiquitous, it'll be everywhere, is as significant to us as the jet engine.
Wow.
And you kind of let that sit for a minute. It's like, when the jet engine came on the scene, you know, at first people were kind of afraid of it because it's loud, it's noisy, it goes fast. I mean, are we going to be able to, at one point, did you know this? Bob, at one point, people thought that human beings would explode if they broke the sound barrier.
Oh, okay. I heard 4 years ago, 47 miles an hour is where your heart would stop.
And you have, or even the 4-minute mile. Remember, we could never beat the four-minute mile because your heart would just not be able to pump fast enough.
Jim Ryan did it, right?
I don't remember.
I think that's who it was.
Roger Bannister.
Roger Bannister. Not the Chariots of Fire, right? I believe there was a thing going on.
Nice.
But at the end of the day,
leave it to Montana to come up with who it actually was. I like Jim Ryan because of his last name. Oh, well. Okay. Hang on just 1 second.
Sure.
We're going to go to our first break and make some money. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing and Seeing Talk Radio. Egbert Ostberg, founder of Drone Aviator, is in. We have so much to cover. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you dare touch that dial. I mean, not even if you're home. Stay in the car and listen. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I know you want a podcast of this show today. I know you do. Go to www.espn1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Welcome back to ESPN 1700. We are broadcasting from the ESET studios. ESET Internet Security. Do more. Did I do that good?
I think so.
Hopefully ESET's pleased with our promotion there. I like that.
Our little robot cutout looks pleased. So as long as we're not upsetting him, I think we're safe.
I like the ESET robot or whatever. Is he a cyborg or robot? He's pretty cool looking.
He's overseeing the drones. It's all good.
Yep. Anyhow, we have a lot to cover, so I want to get right back to Egbert Ostberg. He is founder of Drone Aviator. Egbert, last segment, and thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Last segment, we talked about how your faith informs what you do a little bit. Maybe we can talk some more about that as we go forward. The challenges of getting a business started are many, and I'm sure quite overwhelming at some points in time. Did you start this out of a necessity, or is it something you had a choice and decided to become an entrepreneur? In other words, was this something that you felt compelled to do and you had no other thing that you could do? Was this a drive for you?
I think it was a hybrid for me, right? Because I think I've always been an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And you could tell your entrepreneurs, and look at your kids, I have four. And you could see what they do when they're young. So I had the lemonade stand. I had people come over and show them movies when I was like 10.
And charge 10 cents or something?
Something like that. Yeah. But actually concessions, right? The popcorn.
Oh, the concessions. There you go.
Get them in the door.
Get them in the door for a free movie and then sell the popcorn.
Yeah, we learned that quickly. But I think for me, the big thing was really I was actually helping advising different companies. And so when you see entrepreneurs and they have the idea and they want to figure out, okay, how do I take it to the next step? And then you help them put together a business plan. You help them kind of define what it is they really want to go after. And then let them go and actually do it. It's interesting that of all the companies and people I helped and coached, maybe two companies actually were doing the things they needed to do to get going. And now they're blossoming.
Well, now, you chose the drone marketplace and your company. Just give us a quick thumbnail of what you actually produce at Drone Aviator.
Okay. So our company is a technology company, and we have cybersecurity encryption technology that we're deploying. And part of that has to do Sky Club, right? Because the big thing for us is we have to be able to identify this drone in the sky. And not only as a consumer, because we want to know if in case it goes down, where it goes down, but also what we found out is that consumers, and once you have seen these really cool footage, pictures and videos, people actually start following you, like on Instagram. You got some famous photographers that have over 2-3 million fans and that are following them because of the pictures and the videos they post. And so with drones, as you can see, a lot of that's kind of leaning in that direction. So we want to provide people an opportunity to use this tool, use this platform, but do it safely. And we also want to make sure that you're able to do it because the regulators, as you know, are taking a harder stance because of the security implications involved.
You mentioned that one of your mentors had stated, or one of your partners, I can't remember which, had stated that the drone innovation is as powerful as maybe the jet engine was.
Correct.
That's a really big deal.
It is.
But we are seeing so many things like, Amazon looking at delivering products or packages with drones?
They are absolutely doing that.
And I'm looking at some military applications right now where swarms of little tiny drones can take out things and they're intelligent beings that can talk to each other, at least during their swarm, whatever. The future looks pretty interesting and amazing. What are some of the marketplaces impacts that drones are having in the world today?
Okay. Well, the initial ones, we talked about that yesterday, was real estate. You know, you have the realtors, you
have virtual walkthrough kind of thing.
That, right, just to help sell. So it's really a marketing sensor situation. Or the other big one now is agriculture. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the big drone behind us here, which is
the big yellow drone.
The big yellow drone.
Very cool looking.
Very cool
way.
Looking. That's yep. That particular beast right there. It's about three times the size of what's the regular DJI Mavic or the Phantom 4. And that one's used for agriculture. So they put a thermal sensor package on it, and they're able to identify different things. And so what you're seeing is agriculture right now is kind of leading the pack, because right now the amount of data and information to allow the farmers to figure out what actually works is they haven't had that before.
And if they have a 100,000 acre farm, which a lot are in the Midwest, right, it's difficult to see what your crops look like everywhere, right?
Correct.
Are we talking about crop dusting too? Are they going around carrying around a load of like pesticides, and somehow it's programmed to get the entire farm and make sure that everything is, you know, that the pesticides are reaching all of the crops? Is that part of what they're doing?
That's a great question. In the United States, you have to get a special permit to do that, and there's probably R&D going on in that. In other countries, they are doing that, right? But really, the big key right now is actually used in mapping. You want to map out exactly all the territory that you have, find out different areas of like hotspots. Like before, you want to increase your yields. In order to increase yields, you have to know certain things, like if it's dry or moist in certain areas. So for watering purposes, that kind of thing. And so this particular platform actually has been flying 6 hours a day every day now for a couple of weeks down in, I believe, in down in South America, in one of the countries down there. And they're actually doing sugarcane mapping.
Wow.
So it gets to show you, and this is all around the world, there are different kind of applications. And agriculture is just one field. There's also the field in oil and gas and mapping and surveying, because you have all those just miles and miles and miles of the pipes that have to be inspected regularly. Also, railroad tracks. Somebody actually walks down the railroad tracks, believe it or not.
To make sure that they're all, like, really there.
Well, yeah. Make sure that, yeah, everything's kind of battened down and all that. But it's part of regular maintenance, and actually they're legislated to do certain things in different states. So having a drone come in to be able to do that, and let's take the person off the track, for goodness sake, and put them in a dashboard situation where they actually can see what's going on. And because that's a lot. I mean, that first of all, their life is at risk. Believe it or not, they do have fatalities every year, because a variety of reasons. But let's just get the human element out, where you still have the expertise, and let's use the tool to get and access the information.
You're listening to Biz Talk. Egbert Osberg, founder of Drone Aviator, is here, and the app name that they can download to manage their drones is
Sky Club.
Yep. And they can get that for the Android or the iPhone, correct?
Right, it is coming soon, but it's called Sky Club. We have a landing page, that kind of thing, but it'll be coming soon.
Oh, okay. So go there. Check it out. I don't think you have a full description of everything it does, or do you?
Not yet.
Not yet.
There's still a lot of different benefits, but the biggest one is you download it, and then you're able quickly to identify, hey, where can I go fly this thing? And you already have an idea where you want to go. Like, for example, La Jolla Shores here in San Diego, you want to get some really cool footage at sunset. So you want to make sure, if I'm going to do that, where should I do it from? Where should I launch from? That kind of thing. And then you can also follow other folks. So if there's people around your neighborhood that are actually one of those Instagram people or YouTubers or Facebook that they actually post some really cool drone shots, you want to do the same thing, then you could follow those people and find out where they're doing it from.
Excellent. And there's so many questions to even go. I want to talk about the vision of the future of basically driverless cars, driverless planes, driverless everything. Mm-hmm. Really, the need for humans. It's scaring a lot of people in this world, right? Yep. I mean, if you have a trade that looks like it's in jeopardy, like if you're a cab driver, maybe because of Uber or whatever, it might be a little bit, scary for you. What do you see in your vision? Because I think you spend a lot of time looking at the future with this, because mm-hmm. it's all future-based, right?
Right.
What do you see about drones replacing humans? Do you think we're going to ultimately have a room full of college kids that have grown up playing games and they know how to do everything, so they're operating the world now from some dark, dimly lit room?
Sure. I think Hollywood would sell you that picture, right? That movie. However, I think what you're going to find that where we are today is really where we were 100 years ago, really as a society, right? Where we were going from an agrarian society into an industrial society. And it was thanks to Henry Ford who created the Model T. But what he also created was their manufacturing line, and that was the technology of the day. So back in, 1917, thereabouts, the manufacturing came out, and now everybody had access to the automobile. And that dramatically changed transportation for our economy. Well, you fast forward to today, that's really what this drone is. If you look at the unmanned aerial system, this is what it does. It's going to be able to do things that heretofore we haven't been able to do, or if we're able to do it, it costs a lot more money to capture this data.
So I guess if back at the turn of the century when that was happening, if you made buggy whips, is that was your thing,
right?
And you see cars, the first inclination is they'll never make it. They're too noisy. They break down too much. Everybody's going to be riding wagons and driving horses and all that forever. So I'm not going to change my model. I'm just going to keep making buggy whips the way I always have. Then the next phase comes along. You see fewer and fewer wagons, more and more cars.
Correct, Bob.
When does somebody decide they need to get out of the buggy whip business and move on to something else?
Yesterday. Because the challenge...
That's a good answer, by the way. I like that one.
Well, yesterday. Because the challenge for us today, not only in America, but if you look globally, is that the internet has brought us closer together. So we are only a Skype call away from anything. That wasn't the case in 1917. And so with that, what happens is if you don't find something else to do or are always constantly checking your model to see, am I competitive, then you will be out of business.
You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing and Seeing Talk Radio. Egbert Osberg, founder of Drone Aviator, is in. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about why the government made some changes in what they allow to fly in the United States. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
You're going to want to hear this. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to Believing is Seeing Talk Radio, Biz Talk Radio. We'd like to take a moment and thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, music by Derek Audette, our interns, Sarah, Andrew, Leah, Deidre, Chrissy, and of course our director of marketing, Katie Jansen. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
I'm Egbert Osberg.
Yes, you are.
Nicely done, Egbert. Nicely done.
You just love it when our guests feel so comfortable they just take over the show.
I feel like I'm part of the show already.
We enjoy that. It's good. It makes for better radio, I think. Workforce development. We were talking about humans and the fact that a lot of people are worried about the future. And maybe if not for them, maybe for their kids and grandkids. If somebody was manufacturing buggy whips early on in the last century and they saw the automobile industry coming, and that would be devastating if it took over, which it did. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened to film companies like Kodak a little while ago. Oh, digital cameras will never take over film.
I remember that.
Yep. And guess what? There's not too many. I don't even know. Do they still even sell film? Maybe you
I
can
think
get
so.
It
I think it's
order.
A novelty item.
Is it?
Yeah. Novelty item.
I've seen people, even those older cameras that develop immediately.
Yeah,
you know, the
Polaroids.
Ones where spit out the picture.
The Polaroids.
Yeah, those are becoming popular.
You don't even
again.
Know that.
Just like, well, Polaroid. I got it. I just couldn't think of the name.
What?
What do you mean, what?
What? Are you done?
No, I'm just saying, I think they're still sold as a novelty item. So maybe the buggy whip probably still exists in some form or another, and people are using it somewhere. But the car definitely...
Somewhere in Pennsylvania, yeah, right?
Right.
Exactly.
So are you seeing, do you think that drones could ever really displace automobiles completely?
Well, I wouldn't be the person to answer that question. But what I've seen, though, is that the Jetsons is finally here. And one of the things that we were invited to participate in Dallas was Uber had a conference called Elevate. And what's interesting about that is they, in essence, did a moonshot like President John F. Kennedy did, say, we're going to put people on the moon in 10 years. And we did. And in essence, that's what Uber did on the drone side. They put all the people in the room together in Dallas and said, we want to have drones in everyday life in the next 5 years, let's say. And so they want to use drones when you press your Uber app, and instead of having somebody drive up and you drive away, they actually want a drone to come down, pick you up, and take you where you want to go.
Now, that sounds so futuristic and science fiction, but did I hear you say that actually happens in some parts of the world right now?
It's happening right now in Dubai.
Seriously.
So
you can call an Uber-type drone off an app on your phone. the drone comes and what do you do? Strap in or sit in a little seat in it?
Right. It's called Ehang, another company.
Ehang. I was thinking along the lines of storks.
Delivery, right?
Yes.
And this one is a one-person autonomous drone. They actually have a pilot in command, actually at control. But you know,
so somebody is flying it, just not on board.
Right. Well, autonomous. So it's still autonomous. You just have somebody there making sure if anything happens, they're already to grab hold of the drone.
Oh, the pilot's actually on board the drone?
They're
not on board.
They're in a different area. So okay. If the drone lands just like it would any other drone, obviously a lot, I'm showing the smaller one we have here, but it's a lot larger than that for a person to get in. They get in, they verify the person, and then it takes off and takes them to their destination, just like an Uber ride.
I have so many questions about that.
I have a quick one that's coming from the audience. Does it make the same sound as it does on the Jetsons?
Now that would be significant, right?
It would, you know, absolutely.
Can you get that little
figure it out?
Isn't it a little do-do-do-do-do? Like a...
Yeah.
Okay, you got to do drones with that. Or put that on your app.
We got to put that...
Do the little drone sound
on the
Jetsons.
You know, I'm going to back to my design team.
What do you think? That's
pretty cool. I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Absolutely.
And now one of these days when half the world is using your app and they hear the little... people will go, where did that sound come from?
I recognize that.
Yeah, that's like really...
Well, people... Under 25, may not. Above 25, maybe. Yeah.
Are the drones pretty loud? I mean, at that size, is it like a helicopter soaring over your head?
So you brought up a good question, Aaron. Yeah, the noise abatement issue is a really big issue when it comes to the commercial type drones because, number one, it's a big drone. It's almost like a mini helicopter, and it has... 8 rotors, and they're all spinning, 10,000 RPM. So noise abatement's a big deal, absolutely.
So I've been teasing everybody about this information that we're going to give them, and I guess probably time to do that, right?
Okay.
you told us something yesterday, I think yesterday at by the car when we were looking at the drones, right?
Right.
About something that's happened in Department of Defense and one of the other departments about shutting down one of the big vendors of drones.
Right.
Tell us about what happened.
So this is on the Newswire. Defense One came out that the Department of the Army just issued what's called a cease and desist letter. And that came from the Department of Defense, but in essence saying that any Department of Defense agency is not able to use the DJI drone.
DJI meaning?
That's the name of the manufacturer.
Of the biggest drone
They're the big, yes, they're the biggest.
And they're in China, right?
They're based out of China, yes.
Do we know why they all of a sudden issue a cease and desist order on one of our biggest vendors to the military?
Well, they're not necessarily the biggest vendor to the military. What they are is their biggest commercial vendor.
Okay.
Because the quality and the capability of the drone is so good that the military was just buying it off the shelf. It was actually the largest off-record program that they had.
Wow.
But the issue was then, of course, the cybersecurity, right? Right. So what is actually moving through there? What kind of data, whether it be the data link, whether it be the videos, the location, metadata?
So all these drones that people are buying off the shelf and government contractors and agencies of the government are buying these drones off the shelf. They're that good.
Correct.
But these drones accumulate data.
Of course they do.
In a number of different ways.
Yes.
And the problem is that data that's accumulated, there's no danger in the device itself, right, that's been indicated?
Right. It's not a physical security issue, right? Though if you put it in the hands of a 14-year-old who's never done it before, that might be a different story.
Yeah, we heard somebody.
But really, it has to do with the data, data breaches and the kind of data that's being used. Obviously, in the government, and specifically if you're looking at Department of Defense, there will be operating in areas that don't necessarily need to be public knowledge. And in this case, we don't want to necessarily go outside U.S. borders. So that's probably one of the reasons I would suspect that order came
down. So I have this image of this drone sitting outside my bedroom at night, beaming into my brain, sucking information out.
There was a movie about that, wasn't there? Tom Cruise, The Martian or something?
Kind of sounds familiar, right?
Right.
So the data is believed to be used to go back to China then?
Well,
and they're collecting this massive amount of data to mine some point in time?
Sure. I'll just give you a quick example. So right now, when you get any drone, whether it be DJI or Parrot or whatever brand it is, in order to use the advanced features, which is autonomous features, GPS and all that, you have to use a ground control station. So what you do is you just basically plug in your phone or your iPad or your tablet, and then you create an account, and in essence, you got your terms and conditions, and basically it's like the iPhone terms and conditions.
Right. Nobody reads them.
Nobody reads them.
They
100
just
pages,
okay,
and then say,
on.
Okay,
yeah.
Move on. But when you do that, what happens is now you're giving the company the right to go ahead and collect all that data, because they're collecting all that data as part of the system that's going to control the drone. And so that's, I believe, where the big challenge occurs, right? Because now you have all this data, and whatever that data might be, and some might be public, some might not be public.
But give us an example of the data. Would that be like you're coming, like your app?
Mm-hmm.
What's Sky?
Sky Club.
Sky Club.
Right.
Your app will eventually help people that are flying drones know when they go into an area they're not supposed to. Like if you're
correct.
Out on the Strand and you happen
right.
to go over North
or
Island.
Or you're getting closer to, say, you're on the Strand, right? You're flying closer to downtown San Diego, which is considered Class Bravo airspace, which is the most complicated airspace there is. So then you would know you don't want to go past that, right? And then the sir manufacturers like the DJI, they actually put it's called geofencing, mm-hmm. so it won't allow the drone to go past that certain space.
So they
stops in midair.
They collect how many times people try to get into that space, or how
they can.
I'm assuming that some of this data could have some relevance to our national security. I just can't figure out what they would be collecting that would violate our security if they can't go to those places.
Well, it's real time information that they're getting,
oh,
right?
Okay. So it's they would know what's happening all over the United
sure.
States. Okay.
So if a drone were to fly over Coronado Island, they might see what's going on in our Navy SEAL bases, and that might be something that they don't want getting out, getting into
correct.
The hands of the
they
Chinese.
They wouldn't dare go
correct.
Over the
well,
SEAL
and,
team.
And also
they wouldn't
even,
dare.
But even with those agreements and the terms, how do we know that a Chinese company is actually abiding by those, right? I mean, even if it says you can't use this data for this purposes, that might all be making it back to their government or to somebody, right? Is there any way we can actually have any checks and balances within this country and say, no, you can't use this data for that purpose?
And that's a big rub, right? Because if you're talking about using a platform or a system that's developed outside the United States and it's owned by a different foreign country, different foreign company, they operate under different laws, right? They operate underneath the Chinese law. But we also have another big manufacturer, Parrot, and they're French. And that's one and two if you really look at as far as who in the consumer space really plays. So the challenge we have is if you're going to be using it at the DOD, this is specific to DOD
right,
only. This
right.
has nothing to do with consumer or commercial market. Then it makes sense at some point, yes, there has to be some checks and balances like everything else and every other system that we use in the Department of Defense.
You're listening to Biz Talk. Egbert Ostberg, founder of Drone Aviator, is with us. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about major developments in the drone industry. It is probably one of the most interesting things happening in the world today that we're not really talking a lot about mm-hmm. yet. Probably because there's been no huge disasters
correct.
Yet. Nothing really bad has happened. Everybody's kind of feeling their way along. You're kind of, Egbert, you're kind of at the, not kind of, you're in the ground floor, maybe in the basement of this industry,
sure.
right? What do you see from the industry itself? I'm assuming you have conventions already in the
right.
industry, and there's big meeting halls and displays and all that booths that people have all kinds of attachments and things. What do you see from the industry? Is the industry generally trying to do the right thing by the consumer in making this as safe as they can? Or do you kind of see everybody pushing the envelope?
I think it's a mixture of both. Companies realize that, especially at scale in enterprise, that they have to do the right thing. I mean, if you're going to operate within the parameters of the U.S. or any other government entity, that there's rules and laws you have to follow. Example, most drones have to follow all FCC guidelines, right? So make sure that they have that little FCC sticker you see on anything that has to do with transmission and emissions. And so for drones, the challenge is there is no framework at this time. So yes, industry absolutely wants to do what they can and do the right thing. And in fact, industry is looking for a little bit more regulation and some framework by which to operate from. Because the challenge is in the absence of that, there's a lot of us just kind of waiting to see, well, what's going to happen next, especially the big boys. But I think we've gotten to a point now, an inflection point, where a lot of companies that you would recognize their initials, like GE, and others, right? Intel, for example. Intel's been doing a lot of acquisitions of companies. Verizon just purchased a drone company, software company, a couple of months ago. So the big telcos, big companies, the Fortune 100 companies are now starting to pay close attention to what's going on because, as we just said, or you said, the jet engine, if it's as significant as a jet engine, then we need to identify how this is going to impact our business model.
The rules and regulations, you mentioned yesterday that you're part of a group that's working together out of Washington, I'm guessing.
Correct.
To create a foundation of rules and regulations for the consumer part of the industry, correct?
No, actually for the entire
industry.
For the UAS.
So is there a completely different industry for military-based and government-based drones versus civilian, or the civilian? Like, I read somewhere that the thank you. Yeah, I read somewhere.
I was just thinking the same thing.
That's what makes a good question, is when they ask the same one you were thinking of, right?
I think so. That's my metrics.
So somebody, I heard somebody talk about the game controllers, PlayStation.
Sure.
That the government was buying them off the shelf because they couldn't find anything that was as good for anywhere near the price, right?
Right.
So are we seeing that kind of thing in the industry where the government's using the off-the-shelf, as you talked about a little bit early, mm-hmm. or do you see two completely separate industries?
Well, there is two completely separate industry, and they're kind of coming together. For the reason why the ban occurred is because the government was taking and buying this off the shelf and then using them for their activities, for the missions, whatever they needed to do. And when it gets to a point where there's more of that occurring than through the regular channels, then that's where...
It would be really sad if one of the SEAL teams was sending out a drone and somebody on the other side was seeing the drone coming.
Right.
That would not be good.
That would not be a good thing.
No.
So I'm sure that was one of the big things. But on the other side, the issue is that our current structures for acquisitions in the Department of Defense, I mean, they're, I don't want to say antiquated, but they've been there for quite a while. And it takes time, and it takes a lot of money, right? So the other thing, too, is these things right now, for $1,000, the capability you get for $1,000 would take a multiple of 10 if you went through the regular route, say, through some of the bigger aviation companies.
So Drone Aviator is a relatively young company.
We are.
You've already got the business plan on a napkin done and behind you.
Yeah, that's all you
got. So you got that scratched out. You probably have a fairly well-thought-out business model mm-hmm. developed now. Where are you kind of in the growth stage of your company at this point?
That's a great question. So the growth stage of our company right now is threefold. Number one, technology. We're really focused on our technology and deploying and the encryption piece, and also making sure that we've been able to utilize that. The second one...
Egbert, hold that thought. We're going to go to our last break? I think it is. Yeah, our last break. When we come back, we'll find out more about Drone Aviator and where you are in the process. You're listening to Biz Talk. Believing and Seeing Talk Radio, broadcasting from the ESET studios. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Egbert Osberg.
Yeah, stay with us. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing and Seeing Talk Radio. In the studio with us tomorrow is Deborah Fox of Fox Financial Planning Network. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan.
And I'm Egbert Osberg.
Thanks for being here.
Yay, Egbert.
The Sky Club?
Sky Club.
Is the name of the app that you will be downloading soon. By the way, interesting, during the break I was talking to Deidre, one of our interns here. I don't know how old she is, but she's
very young.
She could live to see the turn of the century and the things that we're talking about today.
Incredible.
One of these days, she's going to be talking to her great-grandkids about way back in the olden days. Because we're the new old days or the old new days. I don't know. Anyhow, you'll be doing that someday.
The olden days, one day, is going to be where the days where drones were picking you up and taking you around, right?
That's right. That's the old days.
By the turn of the century, that might be the olden days.
So we were talking about your company, Drone Aviator, Egbert, and where you are in the process.
Sure.
I interrupted you. Go to the break.
Sure. We were talking about, right now, technology is, we're a technology company. We develop software. We had a little bit of hardware, and we're deploying that right now. The other piece is that we also found when we're talking to different cities that they're wanting subject matter experts to kind of inform decisions that are being made. And so we helped and asked, they asked us for some help, and we've helped some local municipalities here in San Diego. Now we're actually being hired to be advisory in different cities and also a couple of companies. And then the third piece of that is when talking to municipalities, they're also finding that the big part, guys, is now the law enforcement piece, right? Law enforcement and first responders absolutely want to use tool.
And we haven't even talked about that.
Right. And right now in California, there is a bill before Sacramento right now where they're looking to see how that's actually going to manifest. And so we're being asked to go up there and inform that decision as well.
And we're already using them to police our borders, right? The Border Patrol has access to drones.
Yeah, they do, and you have to talk to somebody above my pay grade to find out to what degree. But the U.S. Border Patrol actually uses Predators, believe it or not. I mean, they have the ones for just surveillance, and they actually have their own.
Predators are the big autonomous
Right, General Atomics, the ones that you see on TV.
These are built here in San Diego.
They're built here in San Diego, right? Yeah. I love that part.
Is there a technical name for the difference between the drones that have the helicopter blades on them and fly more like a helicopter with a 4-6 versus the ones that are pulled by a propeller?
Okay, so quadcopter is the ones that are pulled by a propeller, right? Or you're talking about they take the off and on like a helicopter would be a quadcopter.
Okay.
And then just the unmanned vehicles are the ones that actually do the straight.
It look like a little airplane.
Sure.
And
they get either launched by, they get launched or they have some other mechanism to launch and recover.
Have you ever seen one of the bigger drones? Really? How big are they? They're like 20 feet across?
Yeah, they're pretty sizable. In fact, it takes, you know, depending on which one it is, it could take up from 4 or 5 people up to, you know, more to actually deploy one of these.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And those were talking like tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars per, rather, versus $1,000 for this little thing.
Well, I don't know the exact amount because, you know.
Hundreds of millions sounds like a jet fighter.
Right, maybe. But they are up there, right? Because it's going to be an order of magnitude for what you're trying to get. Absolutely. But the thing is, again, the reason why they were using off-the-shelf technology is because it was so much better, more portable.
Than what they could develop.
Than they were getting from the regular, you know, acquisition channels.
Yeah. During the break, Aaron, you were talking about... Urban planning,
that's right.
I mean, this is really exciting to me because we were talking about cars earlier and how they really changed the world. But they also changed cities. They changed the way people commute. They changed how far you could live from your employer, much like trains.
Good point.
And so I was thinking about the fact that you might not even need a road anymore to get to your home.
Correct.
And that got us into a really interesting conversation about pods that you might own. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that because you said that was mentioned at a conference that you were at recently.
Right. So at the Uber conference called Elevate, and it's really cool. It's actually being the director of aviation for Uber is a former NASA scientist.
So Uber has an aviation division.
They do. It's director of aviation, wow. Dr. Mark Moore. You can look him up. But he's been on the forefront of a lot of this stuff. And so he's the one kind of, you know, waving the flag saying, we need to go in this direction. And the direction they're looking at and what the vision they cast was one where you get Uber and it comes in and then you have a drone that comes in and it picks you up. But say, for example, it's further than 45 miles or, you know, a distance that typically a drone could get you there in about 15, 10 minutes. Then say you would go to a station, sort of like a train station, and it would be a Hyperloop station. And so what happened is the pod part would detach. You put you in a train, say with 5 other pods, they would close, and then that Hyperloop train would take you to your next state in the time it takes you, you know, to go across town. So that's the kind of vision that's being cast. The technology is still being worked out, but believe it or not, it's pretty close. In fact, one of the companies that was there called Lilium, it's out of Germany, very well funded. They have already done this piece about bringing and taking off and landing with 4 people on board using a drone, and the configuration is a little weird when you look at it because it has so many different fans. You're like, that doesn't look right. It still looks like a regular quadcopter, but it's incredible what they can do right now.
Seriously, so the payload on that's fairly substantial.
It is.
Where do drones stand from an emissions standpoint at this point? Are you actually better off than taking a car?
You know what? Right now, no. But eventually, I think yes, because it's all about, you know, safety, making sure you get there safely. Because now we're talking about 3 dimensions, and you want to make sure if you get into something that you're able to come down safely. But it's also the safety that happens when what you're flying, and that's what Amazon is working on dramatically because they're going to make drone package delivery happen. I mean, we met those folks, and they're very serious, and we know what Jeff Bezos has been doing, and now I think he's like the world's richest man, just surpassing Bill Gates and Forbes. So that's going to happen, but it's going to take a little bit of time to get there.
So I'm envisioning somebody that could be a real early entry into the market of multiplayer gaming in drones.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these people up in the air with nothing to do. So somebody needs to be working on a massive multiplayer game where you can play with other people in drones and... I don't know.
That might work.
Yeah. I think augmented reality would
be great. Okay, that was supposed to be way better than that reaction.
I thought
that was revolutionary.
You've got something like Google Glass with augmented reality and you're up in the air and you're like doing fighter planes with other
people. Okay, so you're taking off on that. Let's go with that.
I think that would be brilliant. I'll take care of it. I think this is a multi-billion dollar idea.
There we go. Yeah, right, let's start today.
I got your side.
Let's start today. So the future... as we come to the end of the Zohar tour, I can't believe we've already gone through.
It's been pretty quick, guys.
Yeah, the future of drones is almost wild, wild west. I mean, it's as anybody's imagination can now launch forward in this. Would you advise a young person to take a look at drones specifically as a technology of the future? To I mean, I it would. Seems like it would be great job security.
It's absolutely. I would not only drone, but technology. Anything having to do with technology, and drones happen to be that. So STEM figures into that. And that's
STEM
cool.
is science,
science, technology,
engineering,
engineering, and math. Yep. Right. And then yeah, they added an A, by the way. It's STEAM now. So STEAM is what the going buzzword
with
is.
With the art?
Mm-hmm. With the art.
Yep. Thank God, because my daughter's an artist, and I really don't want her left
job
out.
Job security. We don't want her left out.
Yep.
But the key element here, I think, is going to be the fact that you don't have to necessarily go through the whole four-year career tract, right, to actually do well in this industry. In fact, one of the students that we had, actually, her family came across the border, you know, everything they had to do correctly. Parents worked really, really hard to get her to go to college. She went to college. She got her degree in aviation.
Whoa.
And first person to go to college, a woman, her name is Blanding, did a great job. And not only did she get a great job, she happened to land into the technology of the unmanned systems. And right now, she's actually serving our country as a contractor, you know, for General Atomics.
Whoa.
So, you know, making six figures. So the industry right now is primed for people to enter, get smart, get experience, and I mean the sky's the
limit. So maybe the new trade school it includes carpentry and plumbing, but technology is going to be just as much a trade that you can do really well in. I mean, some people just aren't suited for a four-year education, and some people are really suited for that, and they become doctors. I mean, this is a part of the world that people that are interested in this, and my guess is the generation that's coming up now has grown up around this.
They did. I mean,
this is a big part of their life. I don't even know how to use a game controller at this point in my life. Most kids do.
They do. Mm-hmm. And then you think, going back to your point about the gaming piece, right? So yep. Right now, if you look at, there's a real popular game. My kids, I have four, and two of them are into gaming. It's called League of Legends.
Mm-hmm. League of Legends.
Yeah. So this is an online game. You pit two teams of five people, and they're all just basically playing this video game on a big screen TV. There's 80,000 people watching that tournament going on live.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
And that's live, not to mention online. So, yes, we've grown up with
them. They have Olympics for these, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
South Korea is pretty good.
They're really good. My kids had to get up and stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning because they wanted to watch it live, right?
Are they on Twitch.tv?
On Twitch, and they have their own channel, too, on Roku.
Who would have ever thought somebody could create $1 billion television market out of watching people play games?
It's unbelievable.
Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible.
We're grown into a society of voyeurs.
Well, that's
we watch everybody do
now, right?
Everything. Yeah. And actually, that's a good point. You were going to say something, though.
Sure. No, and so my point is that at the end of the day, I think we're already kind of heading in that direction. And drones just happen to be a natural manifestation and a way to do a business or to be involved in that industry and do very, very well.
Egbert Osberg is here, founder of Drone Aviator. Their app, which will be out soon, Sky Club, helps you, well, not helps you, it does keep your drone safe, right?
Correct. It's, keeps you out of trouble, too.
Keeps you safe. And no jail time.
That's important.
That's a good one. We just brought up privacy, and we've touched on that a little bit.
Right.
That's one of the cores of Drone Aviator, right?
It is.
How in the world, with all the cameras, and I mean, I walk around assuming I'm being, you know, videotaped everywhere I go in the world today, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even if I sneeze and nobody's watching, I say bless you to me, right? Just because I want everybody to know I believe that. So, what do you do? What are the big concerns in privacy? I don't even know. I've thought about it enough to know what the concerns are at this point.
Right. Well, that's a developing field legally as well, right? Because now you're talking about privacy in when you're picking it up with a drone, and how does that relate to current privacy laws? And in California, we have one for drones. We call it the paparazzi law, where you can actually get fined $50,000 if they give you a citation under that statute.
Seriously, so what would violate that? Because it seems like paparazzi can take pictures anywhere, anytime.
And that's why it became a law, I'm sure. So the issue is if somebody calls the police saying, look, I believe that there's somebody with a drone looking into my wife's or my daughter's bedroom, and they call it in, at that point it's privacy invasion, and they would investigate that like just they would investigate any other privacy.
I've read stories about people shooting them down with shotguns or even hawks that are trained to take them down. What can you do legally if one's on your property? Like, you know that the space above your home is your home for, you know, you own it for a certain
period. Well, you want to shoot something down?
Can you throw a baseball at it? Would you get in trouble if one is infringing upon your personal space and your what you own?
Okay, that's part of the problem, right? So the problem is that according to the FAA in the federal law, number one, they control any airspace above a blade of grass. And then number two, a drone...
They meaning the FAA?
Federal Aviation
Above a blade of grass.
Above a blade of grass.
So the answer is safe.
So that's number one. The number two is a drone, no matter how small it is, a drone has been classified as an aircraft. And so that would be the equivalent of if you were to shoot down a drone as if you shot down a Cessna. Uh-huh. And that would be bad, right? So that's where the rub meets, you know, that's there, the rubber meets the road, and there's a rub there. And so there's still, we're trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's a lot to
do.
So be
careful then if one's buzzing outside your window, don't just go and bat it out of the sky. You might get in a lot more trouble than that individual who's peeping on you.
Correct. unless you're in a different state, like I believe it was Tennessee or Kentucky, where somebody actually did shoot it down. It was on their private property. They were taken to court, and the judge said, "No, you're okay shooting down your own property." But then again, that's state statute, that's state law.
Stand your ground states probably are going to be more okay with it, right?
In Kentucky, you're issued a shotgun when you move there.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah. Okay. You can't live in Kentucky and not have one, and they have a lot of bourbon too. So
they go well.
Combine shotguns and bourbons, you get things shot out of the air.
That's right.
They're just giving up on it already.
Yeah, better than clay pigeons.
It's a good point. I saw a thing on television about the drones swarming.
Yes.
And my thought was, we have all these crises around the world with North Korea and missiles and things like that. Have you heard of any defense mechanisms being put together with swarms of drones?
Well, there was something on Popular Mechanics, so that's Popular Mechanics. But I mean, we have agencies and labs working on that kind of stuff. And
that you can't talk about.
I don't know about it because it's privacy. It's that's a different
above
pay grade.
Your pay grade,
above
right?
My pay grade and my clearance level as well. But yeah, we've been working on those kind of things and that technology. And to go to show, if commercial is doing this, the question is, what is defense doing, right? Because I mean, a lot of the stuff kind of flows down.
DARPA.
Yeah.
DARPA. I would love to peek under the...
That would be nice.
Yeah,
huh?
it would be really interesting to see what they're
developing. Our fine folks at MIT, they've been working on that too.
Well, most of the things that go into drones were probably a product of DARPA or a byproduct in one way or another.
Well, like the internet, right? Yeah. The internet that, you know...
So we're out of time. Egbert Osberg, founder of Drone Aviator, as we say goodbye, what's the last thought you'd like to leave with everybody out there about what you're doing?
Well, number one, stay true to yourself. And, you know, if you have a vision, go after it. You know, chase failure. I read a book called Chasing Failure, incredible book. And what we found out is that if you're chasing failure, even if you're going to fail, if you think you're going to fail, it'll be interesting what happens when you actually try it.
Wow. Chasing Failure. That's a book.
That's a book.
We'll have to check that out. Egbert Osberg, founder, Drone Aviator, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It has been a great show. Tomorrow, Deborah Fox. Can't wait to hear her take on how we stay organized. We've been broadcasting from the ESAT studios. You've been listening to Biz Talk, Believing and Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Egbert Osberg. Last time.
Yes, you folks have a great and prosperous day. Talk to you tomorrow at 2. Bye-bye.